Before this conversation, I gotta tell you, I thought I had a pretty deep relationship with plants. But after speaking with today's guest, Orianne Bird, I see plants completely differently. I don't know if another episode in this 300 episodes that I've created for Growing Joy have impacted my daily interaction with plants as much as this conversation, due to the way that our guest views plants as relatives, not living things, as elders, teachers, sovereign beings that we're in relationship with. This reframe really has changed the lens in which I look at the plant world and really cracked something open in my heart. And I have not looked at my garden, my lawn, my houseplants, or even the weeds on my sidewalk the same sense. I'm so excited to bring this conversation with Orianne Bird, author of Revered Roots, Ancestral Teachings and Wisdom of the Wild, Edible and Medicinal Plants, to you, as it really is an invitation to see the natural world, not as scenery or even as living things, but as family. Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants. Hello, plant friends. My name's Maria. I'm here to help you care for plants and grow joy. If you're new here, welcome. If you're a repeat guest, repeat listener, welcome home. When we talk about home and family, today's episode is really so special. I'm joined by Orianne Bird. She is an Indigenous Métisse herbalist and author of Revered Roots, which was a beautiful book that I read through and was really struck by. I knew after reading it, I needed to have her on the podcast to explore not just plants, but our ancestral relationship with wild plants, specifically 90 wild plants across North America that she focuses on in her book. But more importantly, it's not just about the plants, it's about this mindset shift that we need to experience when engaging with plants, from witnessing them to harvesting them to healing with them, and to really lean into this concept of reciprocity that we discuss. I would love to hear how this conversation affected you in my DMs or via an email at the end of this episode, and hope that it has you looking at the natural world with refreshed new eyes. Without further ado, here's Orianne. Orianne, welcome. I am so excited to chat with you after sitting with your book and the messages of your book. They've been so inspiring. And I've really been after your book is definitely one after I've read it, I've carried it with me in my heart after. So I feel really honored to chat with you today and dive even deeper. So welcome.
Well, thank you, Maria, for those good words. I really appreciate that. It's been quite a journey writing and sharing what I've been learning.
Yeah. So let's talk about what you've been learning. Before we start, I'd like to acknowledge that I reside on the unceded lands of the Jaega, the Job, and the Tequesta people, as I've recently moved to a new area. So I loved the acknowledgement in the beginning of your book. And I'd be so curious to learn how you became the educator that you are today.
Good question. Well, I'm on the lands of the host nations here in what we call Vancouver, which are the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh people. And what happened, you know, around 2013, when that beautiful book we mentioned earlier, Braiding Sweetgrass, came out by Robin Wall Kimmer, there seemed to be an opening and an opportunity to come into school systems and share about wild, native, and medicinal plants opened itself up as our curriculum across Canada now includes Indigenous ways of being. So I saw that as an opportunity, put my services out. I go into the classroom, usually for an hour, take the children outside, introduce them to plants, but not just through the story, through our senses. So we're tasting and we're smelling and we're feeling. And, you know, it really made me realize that this is the true way of how we learn. Mm. We need the repetition. We need to engage in our senses. We need to embody it. So it's not just knowledge. It's an experience.
Yeah. Beautiful. You mentioned, you know, the indigenous plants. What does that mean? What does that word mean to you?
Well, this was my challenge. When I arrived in the schoolyards, I might only be able to find one or two native plants to the region. Mm. And then rest were introduced, maybe ornamentals, or they were the wild plants, you know, what some people refer to as weeds. And through that unfolding, that witnessing, that questioning and asking, it made me realize that without our native plants within our geography, within our region, we have a loss of biodiversity. We have a loss of insects, birds, garter snakes, you know, salamanders. And of course, the list, you know, goes larger when we think, you know, skunks and raccoons and coyotes and elk and deer and bears. So I was like, we need to bring in that conversation, that dialogue, why that's so important for our ecology, for our survival, for us to recognize that we're actually the guardians, right? We're the youngest ones to arrive. And part of our role is to learn from the ones that have been here longer and how we conduct ourselves, how we, you know, be in that relationship, how we are reciprocal.
How did you develop this close relationship with nature? Was it from a young age?
I think, you know, I hear that over and over again when people ask that type of question to others, that, yeah, there is an imprint that happens. And again, you know, in this journey of wanting to understand more and inquiring, because that's what is asked of the children. That's part of our curriculum, for them to be inquiring, that I was like, what is it that I'm noticing here? Well, that nature has a program. Oh, I'm nature. Oh, I have a program. Oh, where did my program start? Oh, it started by growing up on lands where there was wild forest behind my parents' house. It was, you know, witnessing and finding those little creatures, you know, the garter snakes and the tree frogs. And, you know, I was born back in the 60s, so television didn't have a lot of programming. You know, it was Walt Disney, the news, hockey, and Wildlife Kingdom. And I started thinking about that as well, that, you know, my dad and I would watch Wildlife Kingdom. So of course you fall in love with all these incredible animals all over the world. And my father also built birdhouses. So he had these birdhouses in the backyard and bird feeders. So I can see those imprinted me, that it's like, wow, this is so beautiful to be witnessing them. And what I'm seeing is we're living in such artificial environments now. We're not spending time outside. So each generation doesn't even realize that something's missing.
Plant blindness. Yeah.
Plant blindness, animal blindness, star blindness, you know, mm-hmm. moon blindness. Like there's lots of this blindness going on. And these cycles and this witnessing and us being outside helps to heal us. It helps to shape us. It helps to inform us. It's kind of the guide, the map.
And like what you said, it just makes us whole again, right? There is something missing when we as nature, as natural beings, are disconnected to our natural environment. And I think in this world where self-help and self-development is so important and valued in our society, but you've got to buy the course and you've got to read a million books and you've got to go do the 3-day meditation retreat and you've got to go take ayahuasca and you've got to go, you know, do all of these things. Actually, sometimes like you just have to go put your bare feet in your backyard on the earth. It can be like so much simpler. I know you in your book shared about being a Métis woman. What does that mean to you?
What does it mean to me? Well, I have to say, I'm really proud to be reclaiming that part of my history. It's like when you start to look back and you see this incredible interaction, this merging of cultures, the freedom and the sovereignty that Métis people had here up on these lands out in the prairies. It's like, wow, I really want to feel what that must feel like from that, like my ancestors felt. That it's like, how do I become self-reliant, recognizing I am responsible for my health? And then this idea of sovereignty is like, I'm like, wow, what does that feel like to be able to grow your own food and take care of your health and, you know, contribute to the greater cause or greater good, or that, like I mentioned earlier, that reciprocal relationship, right? Where I'm taking care of what takes care of me. So you know, the Indigenous part of my history really carries those teaching. It's so recent, as my European side is farther back, because so much of that has been erased, or we've walked away from it, or we've made judgments about it, that reverence for the earth, recognizing, you know, these cycles of who we are, how we live. And so it's like, wow, this is my history. This feels so good to be able to celebrate that and learn more about it, and then also bring it to people's awareness. Because I really feel we all should be reaching back in time and seeing how this relationship with plants, with the earth, with the water, with the sky has always existed.
You mentioned you're reclaiming that name for yourself. Were you raised in that culture, or you were raised in this European ideology and had to kind of have this reawakening or this reconnection?
Yes. So what do they call it? Eurocentric view. Mm-hmm. That absolutely, I was raised in a privileged home. Again, I didn't know. There was inklings, there was some conversations when the relatives would come over and the cousins, there would be talk of our history, the Red River Métis people and the Buffaloes and the Dumonts and such. A piece of me that was denied, and I didn't get a choice. And, you know, I have to say, one of the things that I found really fascinating as I was writing the book was exploring language, thinking about language and how in school. So intrinsically, I really did not want to learn English. I didn't want to understand how to write it. I had my next door neighbor. We had to write a weekly story. I was in grade 6 and I've got my next door neighbor writing my weekly story because I really resisted, but I didn't understand why I resisted because I didn't have a choice. And I think that's what I want to bring back to people. Like we said, the reclaiming, because it's like, this is actually your choice to know more about your stories and your language and the culture and the food and the traditions that have always tied us to the earth.
That's amazing. And how did herbalism come into play? I'm always curious people's journeys with herbalism. Mm. How did you start? How did you develop your sense? Did you study with anyone?
So in my 20s, based on marketing and that you are to age gracefully and, you know, stay youthful, I became curious about all those beautiful creams and, you know, cosmetics and skincare. And because at that time, companies didn't reveal what was actually in there, that made me a little suspicious. Like, why wouldn't you tell me what's in your products? I need to make an informed choice what I'm going to put on my body. So I started to study aromatherapy and learn about skincare. And then at some point, now it was revealed, companies had to tell you what was in those products. And I was really grateful I didn't spend all my money on those products because, you know, a lot of the ingredients are actually carcinogenic. And then I worked at a beautiful herbal apothecary store, and Don Olson with Grassroot Herbalism, who is a herbalist, came to the store, was working there, and offered to learn about herbalism. And I thought, well, that just sort of, it's the next iteration. You know, carry on. And, you know, years later, I learned about permaculture. And so it was like a beautiful gift. And then I birthed two girls into the world. And every time they got sick, I would go into my herbal books. So I found, you know, it's a kind of a slow process. And I remind people, you know, sometimes when we're going back into herbal medicines, we just go slowly with it because it's not familiar for us. It's foreign. Right? Where, again, these programs, these narratives that we get woven into without really having a choice. And so using the plants, being in relationship with the plants, asking them to help me when the girls got sick, and then seeing that experience, myself included, I got mastitis, right? That's a blocked breast duct when I was breastfeeding. And it was the herbs that helped to unlock that, to help get that flowing again. And then it becomes a miracle. It's like, wow, this really works. This is beautiful. And then that opportunity to come into schools really moved it forward. And what I love about the herbalism and what I've done with Revered Roots is really, it's like 101. It's just the beginning. You know, it's gentle, it's slow, it's easy, it's practical.
Wedding season is here, let's be real. I just got back from one. I've got more to come this year. And Plan Friends, if you are looking for the best gift to get your friends or your family for a wedding, an anniversary, a birthday, look no further than the Wind River Wind Chime. It is my absolute favorite gift to give. If you listen to this podcast, you know I have two Wind River Wind Chimes on either side of my house because I love them so much, I can't walk out a door without hearing them. A Wind River Wind Chime is the perfect gift to give someone. It is so unique because Wind River Wind Chimes really become part of the couple's home or part of the person that you're gifting's home. Every time the wind blows, it's going to bring a gentle reminder to them of their love, their vows, and the people who celebrated them. That's you. Plus, they have a whole line of wedding and anniversary chimes that can be personalized with dates, and they come with these really beautifully engraved wind sails for the anniversary or wedding. They're made in the U.S. They have the most amazing, deep quality resonant tones. They're weather resistant. I've had mine outside for years. They are still in perfect shape. I cannot recommend Wind River Wind Chimes enough. Plus, you get a free engraving with the code GROWINGJOY at checkout at windriverchimes.com. So you get to personalize the gift for yourself or for your loved ones for free with the code GROWINGJOY at checkout at windriverchimes.com. You will not be disappointed. The people I have gifted Wind River Chimes to have been thanking me for years. Every time I talk to them, they're still like, thank you so much for that chime. It makes me so happy. I'm not exaggerating, plant friends. So once again, that's windriverchimes.com and use the code GROWINGJOY at checkout for a free engraving for a gift that will soothe the soul. Plant friends, my husband is as equally excited about this new sponsor product that I'm about to tell you about as I am, because if you have been searching for an easy grow light for your tabletop or your desktop or your office, Soltech has created the perfect grow light for you. I am so excited to tell you about their new product, the Versa Tabletop Grow Light, which my husband has already called dibs on and is taking to work for his office. So you probably have already heard of Soltech if you listen to this podcast. They are my go-to grow light guys. My whole home is illuminated with Soltech grow lights, but this Versa tabletop grow light is the answer to the small space office dwellers' dreams. Or I guess problems, the answer to your problems. It is super sleek, space saving. It has a weighted base that comes in two colors, black or white. Billy chose black. And the arm is adjustable. This is genius. So the arm is adjustable both vertically and horizontally. So you can hit your plants at the exact right angle and you can move the light up and down as it grows. It's genius. And it's safe, it's durable, it's pet friendly and energy efficient with just 11 watts with a lifespan of 50,000 hours. I'm going to send my husband to work with a Versa grow light and a couple of plants. And I know within 2 weeks, everybody in the office is going to have this setup. It's going to be incredible. It's going to revolutionize his office. So maybe you want to revolutionize the office of someone you love or add some plants to a tabletop of your own. You can get 15% off the Versa and any of the other grow lights by Soltech that you've been coveting by going to soltech.com and use the code Maria Versa, V-E-R-S-A, 15 at checkout for 15% off. So the code is Maria Versa 15, Maria Versa, V-E-R-S-A, 15 at checkout at soltech.com. I'm so excited. Stay tuned on Instagram to see how the setup goes in my husband's office. But once again, that's soltech.com and Maria Versa 15 for 15% off at checkout. Yeah, so beautiful. It is practical. And I love that the first half, maybe the first third of the book, isn't even about the plants yet. It's all mm-hmm. about your relationship with the plants. I'm struck every herbalist I've interviewed, the more important part is the relationship with the plant, the asking permission before harvesting, the reciprocity, all of these principles, and then we get to the plants, right? Like, and then we get to the treatments, which is fascinating. So what do you feel like is the biggest, or maybe why was it so important to write your book that way?
Well, first of all, they asked me for 50,000 words and I was like, 50,000 words? I don't even, how big is that? How much is that? And then I thought, well, I'm coming into the schools and I'm bringing that teaching with the children. Those five R's, right? Respect, responsibility, relationship, reciprocal, and the reverence as well. And I thought this might be a good pathway because it's a reminder that these are like original teachings. These are common threads we find throughout Indigenous nations and tribes in their teachings, in their ways or their protocols of how we conduct ourselves, how we walk in a good way. And I feel like we've moved so far away from those teachings worldwide that it was like, okay, here's this reminder. This is actually part of your reclaiming, is reclaiming this. So you understand how you build that participatory relationship with all that exists.
So you were talking about language in the book. I loved how you spoke about plants and earth. In the beginning of your book, you call plants or the natural world more than human kin. Where does that come from?
Well, full credit to Robin Wall Kimmerer. You know, she's been such an inspiration in her book, Braiding Sweetgrass. Also, Gathering Moss, her first book. And of course, now she has Serviceberry out. And the Serviceberry, I didn't know what that was actually going to be about. I just knew that book was coming. And I was so excited because I found that plant incredibly fascinating, which is part of my cultural foods with the, you know, taking the bison meat and mixing it with the serviceberry or juneberry or shadberry, saskatoonberry, that was made into a pemmican. And, you know, what also came from for me reading Robin's book was, and that's where that comes from. Something else just came in, so I just thought I would share it, is it's like a guide. And it's the beginning of the guide. And I really feel like this is the second part of the guide. Because now this gives you the hands-on.
So you're so right.
Right? We start with the story. We start to, you know, open up our heart. Because the truth is, we never change our mind through information and knowledge. We change our mind when it hits the heart.
Totally. I mean, Braiding Sweetgrass is definitely my favorite book. It was the first book I suggested to read with my book club in the Catskills. And now I just joined a book club down in Florida, and I'm suggesting we all read it there. I think it's an amazing book for connection with others, but also with yourself and with the earth. And it's almost like Braiding Sweetgrass gives you the lenses, like gives you the glasses so that you can see again. And then your book kind of picks up the torch and is like, okay, now that you know how to see, let's review. You have your 7 R's. And then, okay, now let's really dive into these profiles of the plants that you have and how to see. So I would love to invite those listening to start. I think these words that you use in the book are a really wonderful way of reframing what's around us. You know, I mentioned plant blindness, then you said animal blindness, moon blindness. You used words like the rooted nations, the stone nations, the creepy crawlers, the ones that fly, the four-leggeds, you know, the two-leggeds. Are those all Robin's as well?
No, I learned about those when I went to a healing circle. So in my mid-30s, I had a good friend who asked me about my Indigenous background because she could look at my face and she was like, oh yeah, you're Indigenous. Mm-hmm. Some people see it, mostly Indigenous people see it. A lot of other people don't necessarily see it, which is fine. But I remember when she asked me that question, I was like so floored and just like, what? Because it's like you just said, right? We start to open ourselves up and consider, wow, what does that mean? What does that look like? And so I went to this healing circle, and this beautiful man who was conducting, he talked of our relatives that way. And when we think about it, it's sort of more inviting. It's more relational. It describes who they are, that they're sovereign in amongst themselves, right? The rooted nation is a sovereign nation. You know, I sometimes will say to children, do the plants need us? We need the plants, really, for our survival. But they don't need us. And they're so generous in what they offer us. So I really love that. I thought, how do we start the relationship? We have to look at the language that we're using. And in the English language, it's mostly nouns. So what it does is it creates separation. We're naming it as an object. In our Indigenous language, it's mostly verbs. So it's about action. So it teaches us how to be in the relationship. And it's also descriptive in who that plant might be. So language, I think, is a big part of this reweaving, and that everything that is alive has a right to be alive. So we need to make space for them. We need to make sure there's habitat. You know, someone else who's influenced me in the last couple of years is Doug Tallamy with Grow Your Own National Park. And he's talking 50% landscape should be wild. And there's also another beautiful woman, We Are the Ark, Mary. And she also talks about that. She's a landscape architect from Ireland. And again, that making space so our children and our children's children can witness these relatives of ours. Mm-hmm. And then we can go even further. And then we can say, what do they teach us? How are they our teacher? What guidance might they have, in particular in these times where there's so much uncertainty?
Just, I mean, you had me when you called them our relatives. I'm 300 episodes in. I've already read your book. I've already read Breeding Sweetgrass 40 times. And yet in this moment, this is the first time I'm thinking, oh, these trees are my relatives. The birds are my relatives. The grass is my relative. The earth is my relative. It just brings me back to that Pocahontas song. The river and the otter are my friends and we are all connected to each other. But that is such a profound reframe of the earth and that noun. I mean, if you can get anything from this conversation of this episode, if you can just walk through the world, when you walk to your car in the morning and you pass your shrubs, you know, in your front lawn, these aren't noun shrubs. These are my relatives. These are growers. I found these names really interesting. Can you kind of walk us through what are considered the rooted nations? What are considered the stone nations? So that we can kind of open our eyes to maybe be reframing.
So the rooted nations are our elders, really. That's how I think of them. They're the plants that exist with us here. And, you know, the forest, for it to be strong and healthy, it has to collaborate. It has to be kind and it has to be generous. So there's that teaching that the rooted nations brings us. The stone nations are probably our oldest relatives because the stones have been here the longest. Mm. So that's the river rocks. That's the crystals. That's the mountains. That's, you know, and again, what could they be teaching us? And I love this teaching that come from the Quiro people in Colombia about our spiritual mother and our spiritual father, which are the closest mountain and river to the place that we were born. So all of a sudden you're like, oh, I can call on them for guidance, you know? So we've got the creepy crawlers and, you know, those are all those little insects. And, you know, one of the things that I mentioned in the book is we want to see evidence in our garden that they're here with us.
Yes.
And if we're having an overabundance, it means we have a deficiency of something else. So if we've got too many aphids, we don't have enough ladybugs. So we need to invite the ladybugs to come into the garden by planting those plants that the ladybugs love to come and get their nectar and their food from.
And I think too, with the creepy crawlers, and you hear it in the name, releasing fear of our relation to them, right? I have a horrid fear of snakes. And a big move to Florida for me that has been really interesting is Florida is covered in lizards and snakes and geckos and all alligators, like all of these reptiles. You know, I really have never wanted anything to do with my whole life. But I'm finding we have this gecko that lives in our house. His name is Walter. He lives on my windowsill. He's like my bestie. We have lunch together every day. But it's been a really interesting 6 months of like reframing my relationship to reptiles. But those creepy crawlers, like what's our first thought with a pest or when we see a spider to squash it or a mosquito or a fly? You know, you get a fly swatter. But no, if those are our relatives, if those are, you know, part of us, it's this reframing that's so important.
And they're, you know, the truth is they're also a food source. So that gecko can't be here for you to witness and enjoy. That's that reverence. It's like, wow, this beautiful creature is alive. And we're in a way communing with each other because we're witnessing each other. And those little creepy crawlers need to be here for the birds, the ones that fly. The adult birds need insects to feed their baby birds. And, you know, this is what really inspired me to write the book because I love the birds so much. So ironically, I had a great, great grandmother and her name was Sarah Bird. So hence the name Lorianne Bird. And I have such a love of them that I was like, I want to help you, but you have to help me help you because I don't know how I can do that. And then I was headhunted to write a book. So I'm like, okay, I'm committed. This is the second time I've been asked to write a book. I am committed to do this so I can bring my voice to all of those relatives who don't have a voice. They actually have a voice. It's just whether we're listening, so that we can continue to have this diversity of species on the planet for us to witness and learn from.
I am also a bird lady. I have a baby parakeet. His name is Frankie. He's the love of my life. And also I feel deeply connected to birds and hummingbirds specifically, but birds in general. The Merlin app, I don't know if you use that app, but it's like my most used, it's a bird watching app. It's like the most used app on my phone. What do you think it is about birds that make people so happy and connected? Because what I hear from a lot of beginner gardeners is one of the biggest joys of their garden is not just their plant growth, but the bird population that comes to their yards because of the plants that they're growing. So what is this connection between humans and birds?
That's a really good question. I can only speak for myself. What I'm noticing is with my love for them, energetically, they're picking that up. Mm. So all of a sudden, I can see that we're in a vibrational pattern of some sort, you know, connection. And that's the same with our neighbors and our friends. Like all of a sudden, you see somebody that you know and you have good conversations with. You really enjoy that. So when that hummingbird keeps coming back and knows your voice, it brings us such joy. And of course, they're sovereign. They're doing what they do. Mm-hmm. They come and go as they like. They're free. They're actually free. And I think there's a part of us would love more of that freedom for ourselves. And of course, they never sit still. They're always in some kind of motion. And when I take the children out, if the birds are around or an insect is around, I lose them. Like they're just like, look at this worm. Look at this ladybug. Oh, I just found a bumblebee. We found a bumblebee on this gray day. And so I put it in my hands and I wanted to show the kids, don't be afraid. This little creature doesn't want to hurt you. And I said, what it's doing is taking heat from my body. And as the sun comes out, it's going to warm it up more. And then off the bee flew. And the kids were like, wow, it's like, I can do that too. You know, that deep connection that's almost indescribable. Like, why do we love birds? Why do we love elephants? Why do we love anything? Because it brings us joy.
Yeah. And we're designed to love them, right? And it's odd when we don't. It's odd. It's the disconnection that doesn't feel good. It's not the connection. In the heat of the summer, I swap my hot coffee for cold coffee, and I swap my breakfast for smoothies. And Manukora honey plays a huge part in both of these swaps. I use it almost every day. It's my secret ingredient in my morning iced coffee and in my smoothies. So I make a dupe of the very well-known brown sugar shaken espresso from a well-known barista. We won't name names. You take a spoonful of this rich, creamy honey by Manukora. You add espresso or coffee, your milk of choice, and ice. You shake it up so it gets frothy. It is so freaking good. Or I drizzle it over a smoothie bowl, or I put it in a smoothie. And honestly, in the middle of the afternoon, I will take a spoonful of Manukora honey and just eat it. Eat it right off the spoon, raw, for a midday energy boost. But Manukora honey isn't your average honey that you get from a honey bear. It's ethically harvested from the remote forests in New Zealand, and it's packed with powerful nutrients that support your immunity and your gut health. It has 3 times the antioxidants and prebiotics of regular honey. Plus, it's tested for potency, so you know exactly what you're getting, and it has never been easier to try Manukora honey for you plant friends. They are offering us a great deal. You can go to manukora.com/bloom to get $25 off the starter kit, which comes with their 850 plus Manukora honey jar, 5 honey travel sticks, which are low-key amazing for a weekend away, a wooden spoon, and a guidebook. That's Manukora, M-A-N-U-K-O-R-A, manukora.com/bloom for $25 off your starter kit. You will not be disappointed.
So when we talk about constipation, bloating, heaviness, sluggishness, these aren't just random symptoms. They're actually your gut's way of telling you something's off. Look, I'm going to be real with you. As a podcaster and a consultant and a writer, I'm always on the go. And I have struggled for years to maintain my energy, to really keep myself kind of together with bloating around my cycle, all the things you can think of. This is where Oxy Powder from Global Healing came in. Oxy Powder isn't just another cleanse or quick fix. It's a targeted oxygen-based formula that gently and safely breaks down and flushes out waste and toxins that build up in your gut over time. I take it at night, and by the morning, I'm feeling lighter and clearer, just better. Oxy Powder is easy to take, and because of that, it's become a staple in my routine. And I'm not the only one. A consumer study showed incredible results. 95% said that it relieved constipation, 87% said it felt relief from bloating, and a massive 95% said they would use it again, with 93% recommending it to a friend. If you're tired of feeling weighed down, trust me on this. Head over to globalhealing.com/heal and try Oxy Powder for 20% off. You'll thank me later. That's globalhealing.com/heal.
Can you share the story of the sky woman? I think that's another story that can really open our eyes to viewing the world differently.
Well, you know, what I love about this story, and one day I was chatting with my a friend of mine. You know, she's of an older generation. She's in her 80s. And we're having this conversation. And all of a sudden I was like, do you know what? What my relative said, that we come from the stars, is true. And science now tells us we're made from the same elements. And so here's this beautiful story that has continued through space and time, didn't die, hasn't been lost, that has so many beautiful teachings. Because as she's coming, falling from another dimension or from the earth, you know, from the stars, the animals, our relatives see that and come to find out, you know, who this is, what this is about, this latest addition to this family that we live on with here on this beautiful planet. And I love how everybody starts a collaboration and a dialogue. And as I just said about the forest needs to collaborate and we need to collaborate more, right? We need to have more voices at the table to make sure that we continue to weave that kindness. Because as they realized that she needed help, their kindness came. And in the kindness is that generosity that for us actually activates the dopamine. In fact, this is where we get the most amount of dopamine is through our generosity. So in that beautiful story, it's showing how everybody and even the little muskrat loses its life to help. So there's that reminder that, you know, we have the birth, we have life, we have death, and then we have rebirth. And it just, it's a continuous cyclical cycle of life.
And where does it come from? How old is that story?
Well, I would say it's probably as old as we are.
Okay.
As we are as humans on the planet. Because once stories could be created through, usually in the wintertime, right? Where, you know, you're spending a lot of time, it's dark outside, all of that kind of stuff. It's like allowing the knowledge to come to us so we can weave those stories, but also have those teachings of how we conduct ourselves.
And it's the story of kind of the creation of Earth.
It is. It's absolutely, you know, or at least this continent, Turtle Island. And it's so beautiful when we look at North America and Central America, we can actually see that shape of a turtle. So it's like, well, that's interesting that this story is correlating to the shape of the continent as well.
Yeah. So,
you know, and you know, really sometimes like time is irrelevant. It's not about when did it start? It's more about what is it sharing with us? How is it guiding us?
I want to ask you a few questions about plants before we wrap. First off, a lot of gardeners listening to this podcast. This podcast is coming out in the gardening season. I love the concept of an honorable harvest. And I think it would be so beautiful for gardeners who are even growing their food, you know, growing tomatoes for the sake of growing tomatoes for themselves. I know this is more of a foraging concept, but once again, as we're kind of opening our eyes to these practices, can you share and educate us on this concept of an honorable harvest and how we could practice it in our gardens or when we're foraging?
So my teacher, Don Olson, when I was doing my herb class, talked about the honorable harvest. And of course, Robin Wall Kimmerer also talks about that. And it's, I think one of the things that I've really started to understand is that I am enough, right? To only take what it is that I need. And to have these, I guess, protocols that it's like saying my prayers, asking the plants to give the best medicine, to guide me where I can get the best medicine, whether that's for myself or a loved one. And then trusting that there will be enough for me to harvest. And then how can I show my reciprocation? I might collect some seeds and plant more seeds, sing a song, leave some sacred plant that can be, you know, corn for some people is sacred. Tobacco is sacred for us Indigenous people of mixed heritage and such. So there's, you know, there's ways, even our urine is a way to actually, or our blood, because that's what we used to do a long time ago. We actually used to give our blood. And if we think about the blood, it's full of lots of minerals.
Mm.
So these, and which can be hard for people because they go, oh, that sounds dirty and that doesn't sound right. And that, but I'm just saying that's how we behaved. This is how we showed our reciprocation because we want those plants to grow strong. I mean, people are using pesticides and fertilizers and all of these other things that are not natural for the world. You know, I'm a living organism, as are the plants. So again, how does this flow back and forth where I help to support them, support those organisms in the soil so the plants grow strong? And I think it's such a, like what the other day I was at the market and somebody had done wild foraging for wild plants. And, you know, I'm like, part of me is like, did you ask permission to the owners of the land? Maybe it's on your own land. I don't know. For us to, you know, just kind of trust, to really trust and have faith that the plants will offer what it is that we need. And part of that faith is knowing that they are the medicine. So our mind, our body, our spirit, knowing it is the medicine for us, we receive that medicine. That's kind of like the placebo effect, right? Like to recognize that by just my thoughts. And here's something else we were just talking about it the other day is we don't even need to actually ingest the plant to receive that medicine. We can sit with the plant. So we can even think about that harvesting in a whole different way where it's like, I'm just in a vibrational relationship with the plant and not, well, I need to ingest it for it to actually work. So we are spirit, we are emotional, we are physical, and we are mental. So that there is more than just one play here. It's not always about the biochemicals that do this in my body. It's how I relate, how I am in that relationship, how I am in that faith that they will, and they have for centuries, for time immemorial. Plants have always helped with our healing.
And they know more than we think they do. I have this big green wall behind me that sits with me every day, like cheering me on, basically. They're like my biggest cheerleaders, but I do feel their energy. And even today, like there have been little moments where their leaves have like popped, like the leaves have opened up and I've heard it. Which is, I feel like it's a way of communicating with me. You know, you wrote this beautiful book that is the, you know, the beginning is the intro of how to interact with the plants. You talk a lot about reciprocity, which what you just talked about, reverence, all of your R's. And then it's these beautiful profiles on different plants and what their uses are and how to use them. If I was interested, you know, I have a sense we probably have several budding herbalists listening in today. Herbalism can also be a little intimidating because what if I take the wrong thing? What if I don't do it right? You know, how am I supposed to do it? How am I supposed to get started? There's so many plants in your book. Where do I start? What would you recommend for someone who is curious and interested in developing this relationship with the plants?
Yes, good question. People always are like, wow, you know so much. And I wouldn't say that I know so much. It's just because I love so much that I'm curious.
Hmm.
And I always remind people, just start with one plant. So who is growing abundantly around you might actually be your medicine, right? So maybe all of a sudden you have a lot of lemon balm growing around you, which is really good for the nervous system. Or maybe you've got some dandelion, a lot of dandelion, which is really good for the liver and resetting the kidneys. And of course, has lots of minerals. So maybe you're anemic. And so you need to have more iron in your diet, because there's lots of iron in the root of the dandelion. So that, I think that that place of curiosity is a good place to start. Mm-hmm. And, you know, start by just making teas. Did I notice that the chamomile really calmed my nervous system that I could fall asleep? Because if the one of the most important medicines is actually our sleep, water and sleep.
Chamomile also is just the most glorious little plant. It's so happy and it has the best scent. And the other thing that I was surprised about in your book is I consider myself a edible gardener, but I'm growing plants to cook, you know, which is medicine in its own way. But there are a lot of plants in your book that I already grow that I just haven't considered medicinal and actually have a lot of other properties, like all of the herbs in my herb garden are all medicinal herbs, right? So it's also interesting to, at least from my perspective, is to take what I'm already growing and to take plants that I already have some capacity, like some form of a relationship with, and see how I can deepen it, because I already have a win there. So it's easier to take the next step and then, you know, keep exploring.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What I also wanted to do in the book was I wanted to kind of write a story about each one of the plants. So it's not like a textbook.
No.
And even, you know, you mentioned the profile. It's really an introduction, because in any relationship, it has to start with an introduction.
Mm-hmm. Just like you said, with those kids, which, oh my God, what work you're doing with these kids to start them young. But it's that they're not interested in the botanical name of the plant that you're showing them. They're interested in how it smells, or if the bee is on it, or this, and the tactile nature of it. Like, there's the story, and the memory is what's going to get you connected. You have written such a beautiful book. Please tell us the title. Tell us everything we can know, you know, when, what the experience of reading it will be and where people can get it.
So it's called Revered Roots. It's the ancestral teaching and wisdom of wild, edible, and medicinal plants. And I'm suggesting you go to your local bookstore. It always feels so good when we're supporting on a local level. And something, you know, it's sort of like you're going to go for tea, but instead you're going for an adventure to the bookstore. And so you can have that tactile experience sooner rather than later. And so any local bookstore also, you know, it can be ordered online as well. Maybe that works best for you for whatever reason. And and, you know, share it with others. On my book launch the other day, a friend said, "Lori, what action can we take now that we have this book? What action can we take?" And I really reflected on that later. And I thought, yeah, buy the book, buy it for your friends, tell your friends about it. You know, it's always
do it on Amazon.
Yeah. And then have the experience so you can share that, because that's when knowledge moves into wisdom, is through our experience. Our authority lies in our own experience. And, you know, most plants are really, really gentle. Yes, of course, there's poisonous plants. And then there's also interactions. So, you know, if you are on any kind of medication, you can check out, I think it's webmd.com. And they share about interactions with foods and your medications. So, you know, be safe about it. And the other, one other piece that I would just add to that too is, you know, go meet your local herbalist. Have a conversation with them, get to know them, right? And explore that way with them so that you can build up that confidence, because it's just a confidence.
I'd love to ask a question. As someone who isn't Indigenous, it's interesting for me, your choice of ancestral instead of Indigenous for the subtitle of the book. Do you see a difference there? Like, for people who aren't necessarily coming from a lineage, for them to be able to show up as well? Like, was there an intentional choice in that word? Or
no, I think it was just ancestral is, it's like it just goes back in time. It's not specific to anybody, but to everybody. And, you know, it's one of the things, Maria, that I noticed when I had a lot of adults, I'm teaching adults as well, that people from all parts of the world would go, oh yeah, my grandmother used that, or my auntie used it this way.
Yeah.
So people were sharing their knowledge with me. That's when it really hit me. I was like, we're all from the earth. So if we look at the word indigenous, it means rooted to the earth. Mm. So this is about that reclaiming of our rooted space or place, that for all of us to be here, it was because our ancestors worked with the plants for their medicines and their foods. And, you know, today the foods, the packaged foods, that's not a food. I'm living, like I mentioned earlier, I'm a living organism. So I need something that's living that goes into my body. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just get really excited for people to think, I can have that element of sovereignty. I can take responsibility. I can just go out in my garden and introduce more medicinals, or find out, wow, some of the plants I already have in my garden are medicinal. And, you know, when people have said, you know, how do you go about meeting new plants or whatever? I'm just curious, who else is here in my landscape? You know, identifying it. So making sure you have a good ID plant book or an app, or going out with somebody local. And then for me, the next question was like, are you edible? Are you, are you a medicine? I make dyes with you, weaving? Are you a pollinator plant, a host plant? What is your relationship here? How might I get to know you better so I can support you better? How can I collect those seeds so I can share them with others or propagate? So, you know, our landscape is becoming very sterile. And we really, you know, for me, I just want to see that abundance and that life around us, and yeah, that we can share that with others.
So beautiful. And it will look different wherever you are, right? Your local relatives are different than my local relatives down in Florida. But I will say, and I'm so happy, number one, I'm so happy I answered that question. Thank you for that beautiful answer. And also, this is reminding me, one of the best birthday parties I ever had was that my friends hired a local forager, and we went to a local forest, and we did a private walk where he just pointed out all the local native plants and what their properties were. It was so fun. We did this whole foraging thing. It was the greatest birthday party ever. And then when we moved to the Catskills, I did an interview with an herbalist who came to my property, and we filmed a lot of content. I got very lucky. She was just there learning about plantain, learning about our wild strawberries, learning that I thought I had an abundance of dandelion on my property, but I actually had chickweed, which is a doppelganger. I never walked on my lawn the same again after I knew the names of all of the different plants, because there were 20 different plants on my lawn, not just one. But if you're just looking at your lawn, you're looking at green, you're like, oh yeah, that's my lawn. I can't. And you're reminding me, I need to do the same thing now that I've lived here and hire an herbalist to come over and teach me about what these native plants are. But I just can't recommend that enough. If you have a birthday party, or you're looking for a good date idea, or just, you know, hire your local herbalist or forager to go out and get to know your local land better, and then have Lorianne's book with you, so that you know how to use it. We will link to the book. We'll link to your website as well. You have been such a delight. Thank you for this book. Thank you for the work that you put into it. I really am forever changed after reading it. And after this conversation, that plants as relatives is a totally new mindset for me. So thank you so much.
Maria, that's so beautiful. Thank you so much for all those good words and inviting me here. And I like what you said. You changed your mind. Earlier you said, I think the word reformat. And that's what I've heard time and time again for the last 12 years. It's like, Lori, I see the world so differently now. And that's bringing that indigenous, you know, worldview, that if we change our minds, we change the world.
Amen. Aho, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, all our relations.
Yes, beautiful. Well, thank you. Joy. Thank you so much to Lorianne. Like I said, I don't think I've had a conversation in these 300 episodes that's made such an impact. I really, particularly with the trees, like in my yard and on my street, seeing them as family instead of even just living things. Like, I understand that plants and trees are living things, but to take it to that next level of relationship has been eye-opening. I mean, by the time we released this episode, I did this interview months ago, and I'm still deeply impacted by her teachings on a daily basis. So her book is beautiful, Revered Roots, Ancestral Teachings and Wisdom of Wild Edible and Medicinal Plants. It's going to be linked for you in the show notes, as well as Lorianne and all of her amazing teachings. She's fabulous. I hope to have her back on the show eventually and to have more conversations like this as we move forward, all in service of helping you continue to keep growing joy. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.